podcast.
KellerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Killer Keller Podcast. You know what to do. Sharing is caring. Get involved. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. Most definitely in effect. Not to mention big shout out to my people's Aerosol Clothing and their new collaboration alongside Majuri Art. You can check out their new range at aerosol.co.uk or junglistmovement.com. We have a special guest inside the place. Boy, I'm fucking excited on this one because he captivated an era. DDS1T, he'll run the numbers. I'm dyslexic, man. But hold tight, the mighty Ouch 31. How are you?
Yes, mate. All good, all good.
Crazy got it done inside the house. How you been?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, life's good. Life's treating good. Me well. Yeah.
Wow.
Can't complain.
Dude, we were just talking before we got on, right? Because if you don't know about this guy, you've been living in some sort of late 90s rock. The medium like this allows for certain conversations to be had. And it's nuts that areas of your era of graph in London, as prolific as you were, just never got documented.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, a lot of the time, even photos, I mean, if we had phones back then, the amount of stuff we could, you know, sell, you know, the yard missions, trackside missions, even just chilling in people's houses, having mad ones out on the lines, you'd make a fortune now, you know?
Yo, I'm telling you, man. I mean, people often say, big up people with documents as well, who kind of put me on this theory that a lot of, you know, people from out of London, they're the ones that have the collecting items because they're like, proper, like, you know, these are the photos, you know, Polaroids and stuff.
Yeah.
Because they came in and took them.
Yeah, and especially the type of graffiti you're into, you don't really want to be walking around with a camera too much, do you know what I mean? I did have a camera in the early days, between like 94, 96, I used to take a camera out now and again.
Mm.
So I did manage to get some stuff, and I've lost a couple of albums along the way, moving house and stuff. But yeah, I mean, there was a time where writers, they put their camera in to be developed in a boots, and they got grassed up, so they got nicked, right? So when I heard that, it was like, fuck putting the cameras in the boots. I found a little chemist, like a local chemist, I used to put mine in. And thankfully, you know, because we had some real hot yard shots as well, like hanging off of trains and, you know, never got grassed up.
Right, well, because we are talking in retrospect, we can totally get deep on this one. So hold tight. We're going to get in some heavy, heavy conversations on that very subject and more. Brother, where did it begin with you? When did it begin?
Jeez, a long time ago. Sort of the mid-80s, my brother started writing first, and his friends, sort of like when Breakdance come out, the movie into London, everyone was into breakdancing. I just remember them getting their lino out and breaking on the street corners and stuff, and then Subway Art come out.
Damn.
And so that everyone started getting into graffiti. So I was only about 9 at the time, but that's where the seed was planted. I used to see my brother go out on the lines. You know, he was in TK back then, used to go out for diet and that.
What do you write?
Foil.
Foil.
Yeah, so he was first out.
Yo, it's in the blood.
I tried to get into it at that age, and I remember being out on the Met. And I was about 10 years old, literally, and I bumped into him, and he was with his mates, and he sent me home. He was like, nah, you ain't staying out.
It's good for me, it's ain't for you, go home.
Yeah, go home, you know what I mean? But now I know why. It's, you know, it's a dangerous hobby, you know, people have been hurt, died, you know.
Yeah, what did your parents think though, bro? Like, you had both of their siblings running out.
Do you know what? I don't think they really realised how much he was really into it and what it was back then, do you know what I mean? Out on the lines all the time, you know. It was only really till about, it sort of fizzled out for him around about 88 when the sort of rave scene come in and the ecstasy era. I mean, Graff probably lost quite a lot of writers around that time.
I do get the impression that
as soon as ecstasy come out and the raves, they sort of went that way, and then the sort of hardcore remained, sort of went through that way. But yeah, and it was only about, sort of. So I was always into it from there. You know, the seed was planted and just bombing around the local area. We used to hang around at Crickwood Sidings. There used to be like an old warehouse there on tracks. We used to hang out in there just smoking, drawing that. And then we started like sort of dubbing the outside of it, and then it sort of went, spread from Crickwood, went Hendon that way, West Hampstead, and then, you know, it was just really the local area. But really I started when I got kicked out of school, and I started having to travel to school on two buses. So I started taking a pen with me, putting reaches on the bus. And after a while, I see my mate Misto, and he was like, fucking hell, ouch, man. Every time I see you, your tag's on the bus. Every time I get on a bus, you've got a reach on the bus. And that's like sort of getting a shot of, you know what I mean?
Adrenaline.
Yeah. So I started getting two buses to school six back just to get them extra, because what he said to me really spurred me on to get even more buses. And then it just went from there. You know, you start venturing out more, going out onto the lines. You know, my mate, who I grew up, well, part of my childhood, we started bombing on the Northern Line. I was classic back then.
Classic,
yeah, I used to write classic with a K, only for a short time. We got caught coming back from doing inside on the Big Met. He bombed the driver's cabin, and I was sitting by the driver's cabin, and he was a few seats down away from me, and he started writing on the window. The driver smelt the ink, looked through, could see him, got to Moorgate, the doors never opened, and then we just see the BTs come, right? And I was sitting there like this, and they went straight for him. And obviously nicked him. And they said,
for those that are listening and not watching, he's currently in a very cool position of oh shit.
So I'm sitting here like this, away from him. Yeah. And they went, did you see anything, mate? And I went, no, I didn't actually see anything. And I was like playing dumb. And then another officer went, these two are blatantly together. Look, they look the same. They've got the same haircut. They're dressed the same.
They're boys, yeah, get them.
Stuck me up, lifted up my jumper. I tried to put the 30 mil a bit further down. I had a big blob of ink on the belly there. You're coming with us, you know. Shit. So yeah, that was our first sort of, you know, arresting. And the next day I come out, changed to Ouch. That's when I started writing Ouch. Then that was sort of 93.
No, why, yo. Yeah. That was earlier than I thought. Mm. I mean, boy. I mean, for my age at that time, 93... Well, I wasn't even getting into London at that time. Your name for me, I picked up probably where you had continued at around 94, 95,
yeah,
95.
Yeah, really getting into it, 94, 95, 96 was like the real peak, like literally going to bed at night thinking, how am I going to get up tomorrow? What yards am I going to do? Where am I going to go bush bombing? Dreaming about it, and then waking up, it's the first thing you do. You just want to go out. Do you know what I mean? It's like a job. It's like a 9-to-5 job. You go out, you know what I mean, all week, meet people. That's one of my favourite things, was meeting writers. Because back then we didn't know anyone, me and Ricky. We just was new on the scene, didn't know no one. For months, we used to see people that was writing with these purple pens everywhere. And it was like, they had like wicked stains. All we had was like Pentels.
Yeah,
and
kind of blacky purpley looking kind of
dark
thing.
Dark purple.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
was
yeah.
always wondering, what the fuck's this purple? We need this purple.
Yeah.
And finally, we bumped into some writers, Crave on the Big Met, and he had the purple, his purple Fibbins.
Fibbins, was that the... Because I always wondered, why was it purple? I didn't realise that it was...
Yeah.
I thought it was because they were stainers, they just reacted to certain colours or on...
Yeah, that was the Fibbins leather dye, and he told us where to get it the next day, straight to Old Holborn. It was the best £2.25 we spent, do you know what I mean? Because now we had stains, do you know what I mean?
So when, no matter what happens...
That we took that back to the Northern Line, where we sort of concentrated a lot of our bombing.
Because were old carriages. You could put a thing on and it would just...
And they
stick.
Oh, man. The stains were just lethal, and that was it. It was a game changer for us, do you know what I mean? And the trains, like, were just... Oh, we're starting to really batter them now.
How much just talking about this now juice you up? Like, you're like...
Yeah, it sort of fires me up. I don't really get to talk much about graffiti these days, you know what I mean? Don't really see many writers. So, you know, to talk about it, it's giving me goosebumps now, do you know what I mean?
Come on! Yeah. Yo, it gives me goosebumps, about so many times a week. And when you hear the passion in somebody and the intel of such things, like, again, I didn't know that the ink was actually purple. I thought that was just something. Northern Line for sure. That whole era was, I think, the old trains lent to.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started going on the Northern Line, there was a writer called Fest. And he was like this one man sort of bomber, do you know what I mean? And he had a bad reputation. I can't remember what it was about. But a lot of people didn't like him for whatever reason. There was a bit of trouble in the graph world, right? Yeah. But he didn't seem to care. He's still out bombing. And every Northern line I got on, he had this little throw up on the outside of a little festival. It was like this little F with a spliff coming out of it. And I was just like, I want to get like this. So I want to just get my tag on every single train, do you know what I mean? And be up like the way he is. And he was sort of like a bit of an inspiration then. And just started bush bombing. Mm. Being doing it insides. And then we lived at Brent Cross. So as we used to bunk out the station anyway. So we jumped across the tracks. We had tins always plotted there. Mm. Do like 5 or 10 trains and then go home. Just do that every single night. Do you know what I mean? And then we started really sort of ramping up the Northern Line then. Because he was really the only writer at that time. And Mir and Mess were up on the Northern Line. There wasn't really that much going on the Northern Line really then.
Mm.
And
so you knew that this was
I'd sort of made a conscious decision that I want to take the Northern Line. I want to get up the most on the Northern Line because it's my home line as well.
Mm.
And we was quite lucky because we had Edgware Yard, High Barnet, Golders. It was the other one. There was another yard as well. All Highgate, all close to, you know what I mean? All doable, close to each other. But bush bombing is where we started really hammering it. Burnt Oak. We used to sit there, get a draw, me and we'd sit there, you know, 3 hours just sitting there smoking. He'd go home for his dinner. I'd stay.
Really?
He'd come back and I'm still sitting there. And the trains were coming back on the other side. You know, that's how long you're there. It was quite a lot of Northerns at the time, probably about 100 trains at the time. I don't know, roughly. Yeah, you start buzzing. And every train that pulls in, you've got your outsides and you've got the insides. All fresh, not buffed, you know what I mean? And it just, you know, going from there, you start meeting other writers, they want to come with you.
Because you've mastered the area.
Yeah, yeah. And Odear moved into Hendon.
Hold tight,
Hold tight, he's a good friend of mine. Chop, he had his little crew from up north sort of side with Sense and June and Co. They were doing their little thing.
Damn, fucking names I fucking for ages.
Right.
Hold tight then,
so
man.
They're starting to get up on the Northern.
Yeah.
We're getting up on the Northern. And then you had the South London boys like Neat.
They were also getting in front of the
Northern. They would do like Morden. Yeah. I remember they'd done Morden the same night we'd done like High Barnet. And the freaking next day, it was just Muller, the Northern.
Really?
Like, yeah, because they couldn't buff. The buff couldn't keep up.
Hold tight, Neat. Wow,
yeah,
that's crazy.
The buff couldn't keep up.
And again, listen, don't get involved in this, kids. You know, this is literally retrospective, all right, hindsight, which is always a 2020 in history. Can I ask you something? Going back to the, Fest?
Yeah, Fest RCS. Yeah.
So, being like the only one out there at that time, you said that you wanted to be like that.
Yeah.
Do you mean from a notoriety point of view, from a villain?
No, not the villain. I love the fact that he was the villain
because
he didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And he's out doing his own thing. He don't care about all these big writers. So I remember a lot of the big writers didn't like him, but I don't know what he'd done. I still don't even know what he'd done, but he didn't give a fuck about them.
Mm.
He just come out and done his own thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I like that sort of that villainess of it, but that's not what I meant. I just mean like he had like literally so many Northern Lines, you know. I wanted to be, have all the Northern Lines myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the way I wanted it. Ouch on every single train.
Mm. You know? And I guess from a legacy point of view, looking back, it's always good to credit people like Fest, you know, that was there before you, before things were happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel like when you start on a journey like that, because you were a certain age, it was clearly no fucks given.
Mm.
But the peers around you and all these different, like you say, Neat South, up north, so many different writers were springing up. This competition talking about Fest and the kind of competition that he was faced with and the response to his upness, did that process in your mind of like, okay, this could get a bit hairy?
Well, even the people I was writing with, right, they're sort of like my main inspiration, really, because we'd go and do yards together, right? So we'd do 10 trains in a yard, say. But the next day, I go, right, today I'm going to go bush bombing. So I'm going to get another 20 trains. So that means I've got 20 trains more than them lot. But they were my mates. But that's the sort of, the thing I was on. Do you know what I mean? I wanted to have the most at that time. Do you know what I mean? But so I'd go and bush bomb and try to get the most. But other people probably doing the same sort of thing. Mm. You know.
What was your technique in bush bombing? Just for out of curiosity, because obviously there's a lot of commotion in those situations, and I've heard stories on podcasts here, you know, that the smell of those, you know, operations with the spray and stuff, it can be quite intense, and you kind of leave yourself susceptible.
Yeah, I mean, back when I first started, we had at Brent Cross, we started the bush bombing first, but there was a guard at the back of the chain. So now and again, he could hear, and then the rattle, you know what I mean, and probably smell it. So that's why I didn't really stay long at Brent Cross. But at Burnt Oak, you're right in the sort of, you're about the third carriage in. So we got away with it for so long there, do you know what I mean? Just sitting there and smoking as well, do you know what I mean?
Make yourself at home, man.
Yeah, that's it. And then even when the train started coming back to you from Morden, you just moved to the next arch because you've got the tag on that bit, so it looks like you've got more of the carriage, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can move down a little bit. You can do a bit further down in the bushes at Burnt Oak, but the arches was the best. Rush hour as well. Trains were coming every 2 minutes, but it was dead up that end of the line. There was no one ever on the actual carriage.
Yeah.
A few times the driver stuck his head out the window.
Yeah.
Oi, what are you doing? And we're just like, we'd fuck off for a little while, come back.
Yeah.
Didn't really care.
You know what? This is the area in every podcast which, you know, just totally, it's hard for me to compute as a non-writer, but it's something that I constantly question each individual. And I have to ask you this, like I ask everyone else, because if I don't, then you'll walk away and I'll be like, fuck, I wish I'd gone a little bit deeper in that. That lifestyle, you were just talking about rush hour. Mm-hmm. You were talking about how you'd go from one spot to the next, duration of bush bombing. Mm-hmm. And, bro, this is your, at that time, it's your life.
It was definitely, we used to hang around in the local area with a large group of friends. They started going down a different route, getting involved in like heavy drugs and that, yeah. That's probably what sort of pushed me away from them. I didn't want to sit there watching people like smoke brown and shit, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's moved away from them, yeah. Started going out, and that's why sort of graph sort of give me that sort of escape from the area. And then when I started meeting other people, I become good friends with them, like Bosch and them, do you know what I mean?
And we'll get into this in a bit.
You got like new group of friends, and the bond between writers is like proper strong, do you know what I mean?
Because, why is that?
It's like a secret society almost, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because the public hate you. Mm. It's us against them. Mm. And you're all into this same thing. You've got the love for this graph that, you know, no matter who it is, you've always got someone to the conversations, and you've got something in common that you love that's not part of the real society of people. They hate it, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So it doesn't matter who the person is. Like, they could be, you know, the smallest guy from out of town, but if he's racking and getting up and you meet him, he's a good guy. Do you know what I mean? He becomes one of the crew.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who anyone is or what status they are in life. If you're doing the same sort of thing, getting up, you have that love for graph, you're in with the crew.
It's interesting, actually, when you say that. There's a lot of manoeuvres, and it, like you say, it doesn't always matter what it's all about temperament of a person. It's the same when you put a person in a band or, you know, a music band. Obviously, if they've got a backline, they've already bought a backline, then they're immediately in. It's a bit like racking, I suppose. Like, if you've got somebody that is keen and dedicated to that level, you already know the temperament and you know they're on a level, right?
Yeah, definitely. You meet some writers and you get on really well with them, and they come around with you a little bit, but not too much, because you might be a little bit too hot for them. But without them really saying, do you know what I mean? Because we were a pretty rowdy bunch, do you know what I mean?
Talk to me about that rowdiness. I mean, we're talking some lifestyle shit.
It was
here.
Sort of like bordering hooligans, do you know what I mean? And you used to go out on the lines and everyone had their sort of funny little things that they'd done, and you get like fuming them. Like, he used to find like sticking a water, the fire extinguisher in the door, trapping it as you pull out the station, squirting everyone and watching everyone die for cover. Do you know what I mean? It's like silly things like that, but everyone found that hilarious. Do you know what I mean? Or, like, you know.
Just fucking bullies.
I just remember laughing all day because Dre used to call it GLP, Get London Paro, because we used to just have a bit of a laugh, do you know what I mean? But to us, you know what I mean? It's like, don't get off the train behind Zombie, right? Because he had this thing that he found funny as trapping your neck in the doors. At Thames Link, he would jump off and quickly shut the door. And then the doors would close. He'd done me a couple of times like this, right? The doors would literally close on your neck. But, you know what I mean? Everyone had their own little funny things to make them, to entertain themselves, right? And I was like, you fucker, right? I was like, do you know what I mean? I'll get off the train. But not only that, we go around for the whole day around London. And then at night, I go home, go into the bathroom. I look in the mirror and I've got these two black lines on my neck. So not only did he trap me in the doors, he left me walking around.
And, you know, you've been mugged off, basically.
It's banter. It's banter. Do you know what I mean? Graffers, it's banter, Joe.
Give me more banter.
We used to sort of set each other on fire. Like, what? You know, we'd be around ideas house. Yeah. Whoever falls asleep first, we'd get Rizzler stuck to them. You know, light it up. But it's just things to try and entertain yourselves. You know what I mean?
God.
Yeah. We did have some laughs, you know what I mean?
More. I want more. What else? What other ones?
Oh, shit loads happen, man. But a lot of the time, you know, the public see you out. Yeah. You get people that challenge you. You end up getting into all sorts of madness can happen, do you know what I mean? That's why a couple of times I've been nicked and gone down, do you know what I mean? For things, not graffiti, but things that happen when you're out.
Give me an example of that.
Golders Green, we used to hang around there a lot. And a guy walked through. And Tate was there, quite a lot of us actually was there. And Tate, he's a bit of a, I'd say, troublemaker back in the day.
Right, okay.
Because he was such a little, like, menace, do you know what I mean? But he was with a little live wire. And he's done the same to some guy walking past with his mates. And Tate's got mouthy to him. But I don't think the guy realised he was with us a lot. The guy took his belt off and smacked Tate in the forehead there, split his head open.
No way.
And that's how Tate got his third eye. Everyone called it the third eye because he had this big lump on his head.
Right.
Yeah, it was like an ongoing thing. Tate's third eye. Right. Then I sort of ran over to help him. And the guy hit me, split my cheek open with a belt. But he ran off and then we caught him down the road.
Yeah.
He got a bit of a bashing.
Yeah.
But got nicked for it. You know, so, and then I ended up getting 9 months in jail for that.
Yeah.
You know, so things can sort of, you know,
escalate.
Yeah, it can escalate. You know what I mean? Probably sort of the side that you kind of regret a little bit. Because there's no need for it.
Mm.
You know, you can try and avoid that sort of thing going on. But as I say, we're quite a rowdy lot. There's a lot of alcohol fueled.
Daily alcohol.
It's just one of them things. We used to call it Stella's for breakfast. You know what I mean?
Stella's
for breakfast.
Yeah, I know those ones. That's tour talk. Yeah, but
it was just part of what we was doing. Some people like smoke and draw. Some people like the beers. I like both of them.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's just go out. All day as part of the job. You raise beers, raise paint, you try and raise enough change for buying a drawer.
Yeah.
Go back to ideas house normally, go out, you know what I mean? As long as you've got raise enough paint for the weekend for your yard missions, you're good. It's sort of like I said, it's like a job, a 9-to-5 job. The other writers are your colleagues that you work with, and then it's like going out at the weekend.
It's Vietnam out there, baby.
Like, yeah. You know, it's just what I was saying about it doesn't matter age. Didn't really matter. You try and look out for the younger ones a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
that's the kind of thing I really love about. Go for it. That's the kind of thing I really love about the graph scene is it's ageless, it's raceless, it's all about just integrity. You know what I mean? And living it and it isn't always the end result being the piece that people get addicted to. And you know what? I saw this. I was on the train and I see this piece come past the other day. First time I've been on a train in ages. And I see it and only been a bit done. Because they had obviously, in my mind, I'm like, oh, they got chased off or something. Do you know what I mean? But then it got me thinking about that being a real testament to the art. You could actually see in the unfinished the art behind it, and it made you think about the story. Yo, so like, how did they get chased off? What happened? That in itself is art.
Yeah, I mean, getting into a yard and watching a yard, and then you know, sometimes you did get raided. Yeah, I mean, most of the time we got away with it, but getting raided. I remember one of the lucky times I got away is Barnet. Me, Tube, Zonk and Take went there. We got in the yard. We was in there for so long, we ran out of paint. We bombed it so much. So we got on and started doing insides with our 30 mils. Mm. Yeah, it started getting light. Next thing, Met Police come, not even BTs. So we managed to get out of the yard, run across the field, and then you can get into, you come into this little road that leads up next to the yard. And we got over another fence. Our Tube went a different way. And then me, Zonk and Tate went into this little bit. And it's like where all these gardens with low fences all lined. And it was like a little sort of like a grassy bit that the cars could drive down to get to the back of the houses.
Right.
So they were behind me. They've gone to ground somewhere. I carried on running. And then I've slipped in between some trees and a fence and then just hit the floor. And I could hear, when you hear the sound of an Astra coming and it's out of gear, the high noise it makes, yeah. Right? You know, that's, they're trying to get to you too quick. They're desperate to get you. Doors slamming. You can hear now the police, they're looking for us in this little bit. They're up and down. I was lying there. I could see their boots going past. One of the neighbours looked out the window. What's going on down there? And the police are like, oh, it's all right. We've caught some graffiti writers in the depot. We're just going to round them up and catch them now. We're just looking for them. And I was lying there all still. And next thing, I hear a van pull up. Then you hear the dreaded sound, dogs barking. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, should I give myself up? Should I just come out? Like, so the dog don't come in and bite me. And I thought, no, just stay still. Then I could hear the policeman going, get him, boy, get him. And the dog was running. He come literally near to me. I could see the dog's nose. That's how close he was. But he went past. About a minute later, I hear barking. That was Tate getting caught. Then about a minute later after that, I hear barking again. That was Zonk getting caught. And they didn't find me. And I stayed there so long, I fell asleep. I woke up and I didn't know what time it was when I woke up. And I was going, should I come out? How long have I been asleep for? I didn't really realise. And when I sort of laid there awake for about half an hour. I got up, went out onto the street. It was like 8:30. I'd been asleep for a good few hours. Do you know what I mean? But that was a time where I just thought, Jesus Christ, I was so lucky to get away then. Do you know what I mean? It picked up my scent the wrong way and went after my scent the way I'd come, if that makes sense.
And everyone else was behind you.
And they were behind me and they went to ground in the first load of bushes that they saw. But I kept going and just slid down like that. I was trying not to even breathe, do you know what I mean, when the dog went past.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's one of the lucky days. Do you
know
what I mean?
Yo, that is so lucky. Mm. Like, I've never heard of that in my life. Because dogs don't fuck around.
Nah. When I saw that dog's face, I was nearly ready to give up. So, you know, I didn't want to get bitten.
I watch Paramount Channel and I see a lot of shit. Them dogs do not fuck around.
Yeah, mate, yeah. You know, the policeman was shouting, get him, boy, find him, find him. I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to get caught again. I'm going to get caught.
So this is a real potentially novice question for somebody that don't write, so I need to get under the hood of it. Do you feel, or is there at any point that you felt, that the bar in which you were raising the intensity and your presence and, you know, even being around at Ideas House or anybody's place where you knew it was like, this is, you know, too much noise, too much action, too much fucking attention on us. And, you know, we could have a call made on us because we're making a lot of noise in the house. Or if we're walking, you know, like you say, you know, people were after you after doing things. Yeah, yeah. Does it stack up afterwards, consciously? In your conscience, does it start stacking up where you start getting a little bit more extra anxious and angsty and paranoid?
Not at the time when we were sort of like at our height. We just didn't care. Nothing was stopping us then. No matter how many times we got nicked or chased or anything, you would not have stopped us. Do you know what I mean? No matter how hot we thought it was, we were still doing it. It was only as I got a little bit older and you start having more different things going on that you start to try and think a little bit more. You don't really want to be sitting in prison. Do you know what I mean? I got 6 weeks for, like, nicking 2 tins of paint. You know what I mean? Like, nicking 2 silvers, you got 6 weeks in prison. You're sitting there thinking, you know what I mean?
You start rattling with the whole kind of prospect.
If you're getting sent down for nicking a couple of tins of paint, then you start thinking. That's sort of like a little bit later on. But at that time, when we were doing a lot of yards, nothing would have stopped us. I mean, we got caught in Edgware. We done an early in there. And if you know Edgware, there's a little alleyway where the public can walk down and you can see down the aisles. And the BTs raided us and that dreaded sound happened, the electricity going off. O'Deer and Act legged it. Me and Bosch, for some reason, carried on bombing. We still don't know why, because the sound, if you hear the sound, it's sort of like, you know, in Star Wars where Obi-Wan, he goes to the reactor thing and he shuts down the power so the Millennium Falcon can escape. That, it's that sound. So it's unmistakable. When you hear that, you know it's time to go. For some reason, me and Bosch carried on, got caught by BTs, and one of them started jumping around, going, oh my God, look. And he was looking at the tags, going, we've got them. We've got out, look, look, look. And he was going to his mate, ouch, Bosch. Oh dear, we've got them. And he was going, you lot are on our top 10 wanted list. We've got it up in the station and you're on it. And I was like, yeah, but hold on, officer. I don't really want to sort of piss on your parade here, mate, but there's four tags and you've caught two of us. How do you know who's who here? And he was sort of like, you could see the penny dropped, but he was like still happy that he got two of us. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And then took two of us out, but he couldn't pin anything more than just that yard. Right. Mm. When I returned to bail, one of the officers sitting there, and he's like this. He's going, yeah, you're in a lot of trouble. You're a lot of trouble, ouch. You're going to be going Crown Court. They try and scare you into sort of talking, you know what I mean? And he chucked his pen down. He goes, yeah, just off the top of my head, this year alone, you've done at least 31 depots and sidings this year alone. That's the tip of the iceberg. That's what I can remember that you've done. So you're going to be going up for all of them. We're going to get you for all of them. And I was like, yeah, all right, okay, all right. Anyway, we only got done for the Edgware. That was it. They couldn't pin any more on us because they didn't find nothing in your house. And you used to, like, keep your house clean. But that's how I started writing 31. I added 31 to it, my tag. And I started writing wanted 31.
Got you.
For a little bit. Yeah, because while I was on bail for it, I wanted 31. And then once I'd finished, I just went back to ouch 31. And Bosch, the guy that was leaping about in the yard, his name was John Justice 3390. Right, so Bosch started putting him up everywhere, yeah. There was a Sir Boscher 3390 at Watford on a Jubilee train. We done like, there was a train park there for ages, and we done like quite a lot of dubs on it. And there was Sir Boscher 3390, but that's where that come from, you know what I mean? Started putting him up.
Antagonising.
Yeah, it was like because it's a cat and mouse sort of thing, and I like that side of it as well, sort of like it was us versus the BTs, you know, they were desperate.
What era was it? What year was this? That
this was, I'd say, 94. So it's still pretty early on.
So this was really early doors.
Yeah, it was really early doors. Yeah, about 94, possibly early 95.
How many times have you been down? Got that put down? Never, it sounds like a lot.
Yeah, never for. I've never actually been down for graph. Yeah, I've been down for things that were
all related at the time.
Yeah, yeah, for going out and doing graph.
So it wasn't so much the graph, it was the thing around it.
Yeah, I used to get a lot of like community service and stuff like that, which was a joke. You know I mean, that's no deterrent to anyone, really. Do you know what I mean? The guy was this little sort of old Jamaican guy who used to put a bit of ash in his... He used to smoke a pipe, so put a little bit of ash. There was writers at the community service. There was my mates that I knew from the area. We used to like put a little bit of ash in his pipe without any real reason. I used to get stoned. Then, like, put the clocks forward, and then it'd be, you think, all right, come on, guys, it's
hold
time.
Hold on, hold on, I can't deal with you right now. Did that really used to happen?
Yeah, we did. A little tiny bit, just so he couldn't detect it, right? But obviously, it affected him, yeah. And put the clocks forward on a community service, and then he used to, it was like, the only way we got caught is the supervisor come down, right? And he rung him and said, Don, where are you? Everyone's gone. What do you mean? Yeah, it's gone 4 o'clock, they've finished their hours. And so he was hot on it the next week. He was like always watching. Yeah, it was good. You just get stoned at community service.
I must point at this point, this is retrospect, hindsight, everything he's talking about, done and dusted.
Yeah, all finished.
I mean, obviously, because there's cameras back then, like you'd be seen putting stuff in people.
Well, no, this is in like a community, in like a little hall that we had to decorate, you know right. What I mean? Yeah, that was funny times just doing community service, and there's no deterrent. No writer's going to think, oh, I better not do it because I've got community service, you know.
What did your family think about at this time? You know,
I was getting nicked a lot. I mean, I got nicked 3 times in 1 week. You know, I remember that. And my mum coming and goes, you've been fucking nicked again. What the fuck's wrong with you? Do you know what I mean? But there was a lot worse things you could be doing. Knowing what all my sort of mates then got into and what I was doing.
They were detrimental to their health and
habits. There's worse things. My mum and dad weren't really hot on trying to keep me under the thumb, do you know what I mean? Mm. It weren't going to work anyway at that time.
Yeah.
Where nothing would have stopped me.
You really signed up to the lifestyle.
Yeah, the lifestyle of just going out. That's what I loved as well, like the sort of friendship with this, your little crew, going places with them, doing yard, coming out of the yard after, sitting like in like a little forest, having a few joints with each other, talking about the yard. I just remember looking at everyone just thinking, yeah, this is great. This, do you know what I mean? This is wicked, man.
The ultimate famous
fight.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yo, where was I coming to? I just feel like a lot of these scenarios, and I guess technology to this day plays a part, going back to what we were saying at the start, you know, these activities, they can only ever be talked about from back then, because there was no, there's no evidence of it. There's no Polaroids or anything. Do you think these scenarios, they could apply in a lifestyle now for anybody?
I think it's a lot more difficult now. You know, you don't never see trains the way they were, especially when I first started. The trains were freaking mullered, like, on the Little Met and that. Do you know what I mean? You get on a carriage, bombed, and you can smell the ink. You know that someone's been on that long ago. You know, you just can't do it like that no more. It's like it's moved along a little bit. Yards have started to get done, I've seen recently again, or something's been getting done, a lot of outsides and some pieces and stuff like that. But I don't think you'll ever go back to what it was, the 80s. You know, that was probably the most bomb time, the late 80s, and then moving forward into the 90s. I don't think it'll ever, graffiti won't never end. You'll always get people doing graffiti of some description, but never to the level of that sort of era. It's like, that was, it was good times. So.
There was certainly, the evidence that was out there, the documentation that was out there. You weren't just, and let's just get into this for a second, Ouch as a name, memorable as fuck.
I don't even know how I come up with it. I just said, ouch. I'm not going to write ouch.
He just looked great. And I said it before he came, you know, writers like Chang back in the day with my generation, you know, I can definitely see influence there of, because you know, as part of DDS, your style, there were fractions. It's weird. Mm-hmm. And even to say, we've got another DDS, there were so many writers from the crew.
Yeah.
And you were also co-signed. That's the other interesting thing. You would be like the 10-footer, the 10-foot Bosch Paddington.
Yeah, you can't
iconic.
Beat that. Can't
you had it. Ouch was written on there. He would always add, big shout out Bosch all day.
Yeah, definitely. My guy. He's my good Cody, friend of mine, yeah.
Oh, he would always put you up within his dubs.
Yeah. So, because we've become great friends. I mean, when I first met Bosch, I was with just people from my area. Got on a train, was all huddled in the corner. There's two guys sitting a little bit over. He come over and he was like, you lot writers? And I was like, yeah, we're writers. Yeah.
Hold on, breaks. Like, how can you tell when someone's a writer? I mean,
you can spot them a mile off, right? Especially because writers don't like to sit down as well either. Like, they, when you're in a little group, you're all huddled or you're talking about something, or he probably overheard us mentioning something, you know.
Serendipity.
But you can spot writers the way, you know, they look at trains and, you know, whatever they're wearing and stuff like that. You can, there's little hints and things to give it away.
So what did he say then?
He was like, yeah, we're writers. We want to come out of us. We're just going to go out for the day, raise some pens and stuff. This was like very early days. And he was like, yeah, okay.
This is not the normal school trip you'd be used to, kids.
Spent the day going around, and it was like, at the end of the day, it was like, right, tomorrow, let's meet up. We're going to go on the Metropolitan line tomorrow, yeah? He was like, all right, then, cool. Brent Cross, 1 o'clock. We'll be there, all right? Next day, we got to Brent Cross. He was no sign of him, all right?
Pre-phone, like, see?
Yeah, no phones. And obviously, you don't give out your home phone number straight away. You've got to sort of earn a bit of trust, whatever. And anyway, we went off on our way after about waiting for a little while. And when we come back later that night, his tag was all over Brent Cross. So he'd come, but he was just late. And I didn't see him again after that for about a year. And I sort of met him by chance. You know, I was in Tufnell Park Hall of Fame. And I started walking to Archway. On the way to Archway, there's a station, Upper Holloway, started doing a little dub there.
Right.
A little daytime like dub that you can see on the street. And a member of the public challenged me and said, I'm going to go and phone the police. And I was like, let me just finish. I'll just put my outline on.
Yeah, sure, let me just finish.
I'm just going to put my outline on. And I thought, right, I better go to ground. And I head back to Tufnell. And when I head back, he was in there. And I was like, oh, where was you that day? Do you know what I mean? And then from that day, I go see him. I said, we're going to do Barnet tonight. Do you want to come? He was like, yeah, I'll come, Barnet. And that was it. That was, we exchanged Forged. Numbers. That was it. That was the start of Ouch and Bosch, if you like. Because you sort of mention them in the same sort of sentence.
You
always,
really do. You
know? It's like there's writers have partners like Rate and Teach.
Yeah.
Coz and Zonk.
Without question. And again, this is what blows my mind at the thought that you're inside the studio, man. It's just that level of co-sign and collaboration from a public perspective, mm-hmm. as somebody that would never met before, mm-hmm. and I see it, that shit is, you can't put a price on that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine the shenanigans and the...
Yeah, he's my right-hand man, you know what I mean? You could rely on him, yeah. You know, that's the thing. He's a soldier, yeah.
Any regrets?
Not for Graf, no. I loved that time of my life. I've got regrets in life and I think, oh, what a waste of time. I was just, you know, doing that, hanging around down there. But graffiti, no, because, you know, you went around, you met people, you know, you got to see different things, meet different people. You know, still that I know sort of today, I don't really have much to do with graffiti writers as such no more, but I still have the fond memories.
Because you kind of quit at 2000.
Yeah, I quit, you know, and other things happened in my life around about that time. But, just if I see them, it's like you've never been away. Do you know, you still got that sort of bond with them. Do you know what I mean? So, I look back with like good memories like with a Graf.
Just as out of curiosity, and you don't have to get too deep, what was the deciding factor in 2000 where you were just like, yeah, I'm going to quit this for good?
Right, 99, we was out, it was me, Zonk, Coz, Bosch, we got into a silly fight, you know, outside a pub, you know, like a shop. We ended up going down, me and Bosch were inside for the best part of a year, and we were cellmates, and it was... Because we were in there together, I don't used to look after us, come up every couple of weeks, couple of ounces of weed. Do you know what I mean? You had gym.
Mad.
Yeah, you had gym a couple of times a day in with my cellmate. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I soon went past, come out in 99. The day I got out, the next day, there was a little bit of trouble in the local area. My brother ended up getting stabbed. He died. So after that sort of time, that sort of lifestyle died for me. I tried to keep it going a little bit. Keep going out with them, but I just drifted away then. That's really it, because without really knowing, I sort of started disassociating myself with anything that happened or what my lifestyle was around that sort of time.
Was the death of your brother, did that play an intrinsic part?
Yeah, because it was massive, because, you know, my mum obviously going through what it was, you didn't want to start getting nicked and bringing trouble to the house and getting raided again, and you don't want to go back in prison while all that's happened.
Did you question your mortality as well?
My whole life changed, you know, as a person. Everything changed, you know what I mean? Really for the better, probably, you know what I mean? Better person, but, yeah, it was tough. So that's why they just died that right then, so, yeah.
That's profound, man.
I even sort of locked off away from everything, even friends, sort of just... You know, locked off away. I couldn't.
What, outside of Graf? Just
everything. Even my friends. I just sort of went through it. Tried to just stay in, just sort of thing, just with my family and
depression.
Stuff. Yeah, I think there was a bit of depression in it. You know what I mean? And it took a long time to come out of that. I couldn't even tell you sort of who was up in the thousands. I remember 1T, were getting up. ATG, Tox kind of took over London Underground. Yeah. I remember that, but. Other than that, I can't really sort of tell you who was about then, but starting to obviously love it after 2010, join like social media and that. So you start getting the connections again with people that you lost. But yeah.
You think everyone asked? I mean, this is, I don't know how publicly known between your friends this is. It's certainly public now. Did you veer an edge of caution when reconnecting with people from social media? Because obviously it's like, it's almost like friends reunited. It's like going back to a school, you know, going back to school and meeting your friends.
Yeah, yeah. I remember we went down when Zombie first got the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went down to see him. This was like about 2003. I was only going down to see the boys in the shop, yeah, with Bosch.
That's I didn't all, want no trouble.
That's all I was going to do. A few beers in the shop, yeah. Next thing, we're on tracks somewhere doing a dub. Do you know what I mean? So it's like...
Take the jungle out of the cat, can you?
Do you know what I mean? It's dangerous. Mm. It's dangerous, do you know what I mean?
And so, that was the only time you...
That was after 2000. Yeah. It was probably one of the only times that I went with other writers. I'd done a few things on my own because I lived at Highgate. I'd done the yard on my own one night. I couldn't sleep. I was at my girlfriend's house. And I'd done the yard with a pen, right, with a 30 mil. And her dad had like loads of emulsion in the cupboard. And I'd done some track sides in emulsion just to try and... Do you know what I mean? I couldn't sleep. Do you know what I mean? Just the same. But that's sort of like the last few things that I'd done that I remember then.
When you see, like, because again, you're cited as such an influence in the 90s era, like, do you see that in Graf now? I know that's a really, because it's subjective. The whole thing's
what,
fucking subjective.
My influence on people? Or...
No, do you see the influence of that era in Graf now?
I think the people would need to be involved. The type of graffiti I was involved in, it was more sort of like bombing, dubs, just getting up on trains and you know, so you really needed to be part of that era or grew up, you know, traveling while that was going on. Like, you know, I know people that used to go to work and but it was a bit, you know, not involved in Graf at that time, but remember seeing like all the tags and bombing and you know, so they remember
that was me, that was me, I was in that, bro.
Yeah, so I think that's sort of really how people would remember sort of us. So there's writers that if a new writer started writing, just saw a piece on a trip or outside and started writing today, you would soon learn who certain writers are over the decades.
Yeah,
you would know who they are. You know, like Drax and Cast and Fuel, Prime, you know, Rate, Teach. You would quickly know who they are. But there was a lot of people part of a jigsaw that they're not quite so remembered. You know, bombers, because they haven't got the photos. They didn't go taking photos and putting them on social media. They done it and it got buffed. That's it. You know, so it's a lot different. But obviously they've left legacies in Graf that will always be there. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You'll always know who them guys are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they do need to be recognised, you know?
No, they was when I first started, the original DDS crew. They were just getting going.
How did it feel to be put in DDS?
It was amazing.
How did you get put in DDS?
It was Shoe 2 put Bosch and myself in it. Wow. Yeah, because he was more friendly with Sub and Shoe than I was. And Shoe puts Bosch in it. And he goes, and Ouch can put it up as well. Do you know what I mean? He's like, oh, cool. So over the
How'd
phone.
How did
it feel? It was good. It was a good feeling. It was the crew that everyone that I knew, that was the crew. Do you know what I mean? The Rate, Teach, Diet, Stacks, Form 72. You know, they were the ones that Sub and Shoe, obviously Sub to me, was the all-out king of London. He had everything, do you know what I mean? Streets, he just had everything.
Incredible.
And to me, they're still the best writers, in my opinion, do you know what I mean? I might be being biased.
The buck stops.
Yeah, but you know, because that was my era, but them guys always look to think, you know what I mean? They were they're the benchmark. They're still doing it now, some of them, you know, doing bits and pieces, you know. You know, still involved in the graph scene. Do you know what I mean?
I'm loving the way that some of the old school guys. I mean, you know, obviously, the Hall of Fame still exists, and it's great to see. I've said it before on podcasts. It's like a four wheel drive when you see one of your kind of old school or your contemporaries doing a piece with the new paint or doing something.
And watching them evolve and you know, Zombie's characters that he does and how they change. You know,
so good.
Over the years and. You know, the really creative side of Graf.
I have to say, like, that's some of the most rewarding of being a person watching and seeing it evolve. Because, and this is another, actually, an important aspect of the Graf journey, because, you know, nowadays it's becoming so socially acceptable. A lot of Graf is being used to regentrify areas and give... communities a bit more of a social vibe to it. This was always the meat. I used to come back off tour from gigs or wherever, and as soon as I saw names like yourself on a train or coming in, you know, from the whatever junction or motorway, I just knew I was back. And there was
good old London.
you did. But my point being is you have to have a great tag to be able to do the dubs. You have to have a bit dub to do a piece. You have to have to be able to be. I feel you just got to go through those motions.
Yeah, some people really have to put the effort in. They don't. Mm. It doesn't come naturally to them. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I never really done wall. I've done track sides and some walls, but whenever I've done walls, I always used to think, "Fucking waste of paint. I've wasted my paint. I could have done a yard with that." Do you know what I mean? My thing was just. I think whether it was the whole adrenaline and just being in yards was just give me that extra buzz. When I done a wall, I didn't get the same. That's probably why I've sort
the buzz of it.
I'm not active no more. Whereas some people from my sort of era, they you know, they go out and do walls and they like to do walls. They stand back, they look at it, but it just doesn't do that same thing for me. I've tried to do that, but it just doesn't. I don't get the same thing. I like looking at people's stuff, and you know, when I used to do track sides and I go past it, I used to like seeing, oh yeah, it's my track side, but. It just didn't do the same sort of thing for me. I sort of liken it to people that used to steal cars and go driving. You know what I mean? That adrenaline sort of thing. You
so
know?
It's more the stealing of the car as opposed to driving it.
Yeah, it was, you know, that sort of...
That's interesting.
That sort of thing. That why did they do that? Just to go and drive a car everywhere. Do you know what I mean?
That's an interesting point of view. Yeah. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. I just couldn't get into doing walls. I didn't really want to... I'd done a few pieces on trains and that, but I would prefer to go into a yard... and dub each train and get up on each train. That's what I prefer, to have my tag on every train.
Or rather, you preferred.
You preferred, yes. Rather than, you know, some people like to go in, do a window down whole car. It looks lovely. When you see a window down full colour whole car running in, it looks the bollocks, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? But...
Man, listen, I said it before, I'll say it again. Like, when you see, as a member of Joe Public, you see a train roll in, a piece, and you go and press that button to go and sit in the same train that has the piece on it.
Yeah.
I don't care whether you're 3404. You feel like the king of the carriage.
Yeah. And you hear people talking about it.
Yeah.
And they're like, you get off, and then they start trying to read what it says. You know.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we didn't really. I don't think people done graffiti for. The public as such, when we that sort of era on trains now, we've done it for each other, really. We weren't really, because people who didn't like graffiti, they hated it back then. Do you know what I mean? So we was doing it for each other. We're doing it for the other writers, you know, to see, not so much for the public, you know. Unless you, I don't know, if you was more into the art side and doing pieces and wanting public to see it. I don't know. I don't really meet that many people that was
on that art.
Yeah, it was more for the writers. The writers do it for the other writers.
Yeah, it's a very Kings and Toys. That documentary alone as the, you know, okay. How come you weren't in Kings and Toys? That's an interesting.
I'm not sure.
Because you were totally. That was an era, right?
Yeah. That was the sort of era I was in. But
I guess there were loads of people.
There was a lot of people.
That didn't go in that.
Yeah, there was a lot of people. That, you know, unsung heroes of that. Decade, you know.
Give me some unsung heroes.
Sort of like Koff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neat.
Yeah.
I'd say they're sort of unsung. There was like, you know, there's loads of writers like that got really up. You know, they made a big impact. And
give me more names.
I remember two writers that come, they battered it. Fink and Heist, do you remember them?
Yeah.
They come, battered it, and they've sort of... You don't really get to hear anyone talking about them no more.
Yo, Heist was a fucking badass name.
Yeah, all the tall, the up-high dubs you used to do.
Hold that to them two. Wow. Irish, again.
Irish, he was around when I first come and then sort of faded away a little bit.
Yeah.
All the Kedster as well.
Yeah,
so there's quite a few like that. And obviously, the mainstay... They stay the longevity of it, but
do you think with the Hall of Fames? Because again, these are I know it depends on what your mentality was at the time, but for the likes of a young impressionable bumpkin like me, you know, going to, or at least trying to stay as long as I can in the pit, discovering where a Hall of Fame was, and just knowing the. As a spectator, the risks involved in me being there myself, that was my adrenaline.
Yeah, because there were some dangerous places, do you know what I mean? Yeah. You don't want to go to, but...
So I think from perhaps a little bit of me saying, guys, come on, share that anxiety with the Joe Public. But there was a thing where you guys had, like you said, you had the testosterone, the endorphin hit of, I'm doing this legally. From a Joe Public's point of view, those Hall of Fames, man, like, you go in there, you feel like you're a tophia of like some levels, and you're going 10 to the dozen because you're in a place which is way out of your comfort zone, and those places you didn't fuck. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
What a crazy dynamic that was.
Yeah, there's a lot of places like that. I mean, I was like mainly up in sort of Tufnell Park, Camden football pitch type of thing.
What was that Hall of Fame up in Tufnell Park?
Tufnell Park was brilliant. It's where I met. Like the main, some writers really, Slam and Act. Yeah. That's where I first met them guys.
I remember that one well.
I met them guys, got into TBF with them. That was a nice little era for us, do you know what I mean?
One era and a time that could never be repeated. It's and it's a pleasure having you on, man.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. You know, really? Don't get, I've watched the podcast, like I told you, loved listening to writers talk and you like about the old missions they used to get up to and whatnot.
And we did make it a point on this one that you wanted to fill the gaps of the things that you wanted to hear when the podcast was.
Yeah. Like the sort of things I like to hear writers speak about is what they've done missions-wise, how they started, you know, that sort of thing. So,
because they never get... It's, and that's the thing, and this is what, again, it's so important, you know, that these times that are of the past never get forgotten because they are easily forgotten. And meanwhile, massive corporate companies are taking graph influence and making it public. The street art world that has exploded, and people don't know the story or the fault lines or anything. It's super important because you can't have one without the other. You can't.
It started as a little tag in New York, Tacky 183.
Yeah.
And it's ended. Well, it's not ended. It's still going.
Yeah.
And it's different fractions.
Yeah.
You got your street art, which I like some of it. You know what I mean? I look at it and think, looks good. Do you know what I mean? Some people are into that. You know, it's, different writers had different, as we said earlier, do you know what I mean? Someone like Teach, he had everything. Throw-ups, pieces, dubs. Some people like to do streets, you know, streets only. Like my mate Crime, rest in peace.
Crime, hold tight.
He used to battle all around London. You know, I used to see his tag for ages, Crime. Then finally we met him. I met him in Bagley's, raving. And the rest is history.
You didn't get arrested for anything in Bagley's, did you?
Nah, I got kicked out a few times, but but not arrested.
You don't come across as a menace, my brother. Wait, honestly, he's a good-looking lad as well. Pixelations don't do him justice. But seriously,
you're too kind,
I can't imagine you just being.
No, you know you wouldn't know that. But I don't know. Alcohol played a lot, and also the sort of when you're together, when there's a whole load of you together, and you sort of bounce off each other. That's when things sort of happened, yeah. But
what'd you tell your kids if they turned around and said, "Ah, look, Dad, I think I want to try. I saw this piece the other day. I saw this graffiti the other day, Dad. No, you was a bit of a, you know, a partaker back in there. Can we have a go? What would you say to them?
I'll try and steer them in a different direction.
You're the first person to ever say
more
that.
More the art side of it. I'll try to, you know.
Yeah.
I'll steer them down that way.
Yeah.
They're a lot different to me, my children. Yeah. You know, they've got their heads screwed on. One's in uni.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, I never dreamt of going to uni when I was young.
Yeah, the prospects are all very different, aren't they?
Yeah. So he's heading in a good direction.
And you know what as well, bro? Like, and this is something I talk about in music a lot on the music podcast. The opportunities out there for people, for young people now, is a lot more fruitful, but at the same time, there's a lot more obstacles. And when you've got that in play, you have got to steer people into what is right for their future, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real fine line because you don't want to be that person, which can easily be when you're talking about stuff the way we are.
Yeah. I mean, especially as a parent, you want the best for your children, don't you? Just, you know, I had my son in 2002.
Okay.
It was like a blessing sort of thing around that time.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean? So
grounded you and gave you focus.
Yeah, that was once my son was there. Do you know what I mean? You got to say, do you want to be a dad or do you want to be locked up? Your son's wondering where you are. There's only one choice for me. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think you were looking for something at that time that would kind of...
Possibly. I think we had no plans of having children when it happened. It was just like, wow. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, you become a dad and...
Do you think they'll be watching this now?
I can't let them see it. They don't know. certain parts of my life. Do you know what I mean?
That's incredible.
Yeah, can't let them really. Just I'm not comfortable at the moment. Maybe as they get older, I'll let them in. To
because they're too young at the moment.
Well,
too.
One's 18, one's 14. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't feel comfortable about letting them know that side of things at the moment. You know, they know I've done graffiti.
Yeah,
they know I've done graffiti. Okay. But what type and what happened? Yeah. From it. That's a different story altogether.
This is a family exclusive. So when you do see this, guys, recognise here that this man, he done so much for the scene and took so many hits, but at his core, he did what was right for an organism that was so huge, and his contribution will go down in history. How's that?
That's all good, my brother. All good.
Ladies and gentlemen, anyone you want to shout out?
Just all the guys I used to write with. Do you know what I mean? Good times to them. Big up all them lot. Some of them still going. It's good to see. And also to my man Chop. Stop ignoring me on Facebook. Yeah, because I want to go to the chicken. I want to go to the chicken wing shop with. Yeah, he keeps it. I hope he watches this video and gets in contact with me.
Without question, he will. I'm sure he will be. Anyone else you want to shout out? Brother?
Bosch. Yeah, of course, my main
big
man.
Big Bosch, you know, all day. Yeah.
Oh dear.
Sub, Shoe.
Yeah, all the guys and all the fallen soldiers, Crime, Joke, Foil. Yeah, Zonk, Coz, all the guys. They know who they are. Sham.
Man.
You got to get him on. You've got to try and get Sham on, innit?
This is...
Look at that. That's the reach. Look at that.
Yeah, it's about as close as I got. But for, if you're listening and not watching, there is a Sham tag. He came in on another guest podcast and me and my guy go back to I'd love to have him on. There's so many, I mean, you know, we're just getting started over here at the Killer Keller podcast and we're just going to keep on rolling. Thank you so much for passing through, my brother.
What pleasure to be here, mate. It really is.
It's been a pleasure having you on and honestly, good to finally meet you.
You too, mate.
Good peoples. Good.
Thank you.
Killer Keller podcast, that was in Hours of Fashion. And you've got Hours of Fashion if you want to go back and check out all the archive, loads of it. Loads and bits and bobs, keeping the culture moving. And thank you. You all for allowing me to be that conduit. And Television app, stay out of trouble. We're out lucky and was out of fashion. Stay lucky. Peace.